As I understand it, integration is an art, not a science. This approach is something that's been helpful for me. It's my integration approach. Everyone has their own tools and methods of integration, and my integration approach is a function of my worldview. I've made an effort to find the balance between intellectual and experiential. And my preference in an integration practice is for it to be more of a conversation than a lecture. But due to the one-directional nature of this platform, I'll do my best to convey my integration practice, and hopefully it comes across the way that I intend it to. The philosophical scaffolding for my integration practice comes from Ken Wilber's integral theory, but it is supported heavily by the presence process, by Eckhart Tolle, and by literally every book I've ever read. Such is the nature of integration. Every single piece of information is important in its own right. Every book I've listed in the show notes up to this point has been crucial in my reaching the understanding that I have today. Every single book is valuable, even if it exists purely as an example of something that's not ideal. I'm going to start off by explaining a broad overview of Ken Wilber's work. And this is something I've been reading about for about 8 years, and it's difficult for me to put it into a brief summary like this. But hopefully I can do it justice, because reading Ken Wilber's work directly can be really overwhelming and confusing. He repeats himself a lot, and he contradicts himself sometimes, but overall, his overarching theory is really sound, in my opinion. And it consists of three primary components: cleaning up, waking up, and growing up. I discussed cleaning up in the fourth episode regarding shadow, and I covered that one first because I think that if you follow that one to its end, it does take care of the growing up process on its own. However, it's easy to get hung up in different places without realizing it, and being conscious of the growing up process, as Ken Wilber explains it, inherently progresses you through that process. I'm going to talk about integral theory and the altitudes of development in general, and then I'm going to talk about each one briefly to give my best summary and give you some insight into maybe what perspectives you'll see at those various levels. I'd like to clarify a couple things before I jump into this. This is a system of ranking, but it is not a system of judgment. It is a system of observation. When I refer to the various levels, that is not a condemnation of anyone, and that is not a promotion of anyone. It is simply an observation. The progression through this system can be measured for individuals, but it can also be measured for collectives and for societies and for the planet as a whole. For the purpose of this recording, I'm going to explain it mostly from the perspective of an individual. That makes it easier to get the concept across because individuals typically exist primarily at one level at a time. But that doesn't mean that all qualities of their life fall under that level. Most people will have a majority of their ideology tied to one level, with various aspects in the level above and various aspects in the level below. These levels are somewhat fluid in that as people are stressed or if they're in fear, they'll often regress back to lower levels temporarily. And sometimes when they're feeling blissful or ecstatic, they will progress to a higher level temporarily. I tend to view this theory on something similar to a radar chart or a spider chart, where the individual begins at the center and then its various aspects spread out away from the center to encompass more and more of the chart. Those data points moving away from the center could represent any aspect of an individual's life. It could be their understanding of nature, their understanding of economics, their understanding of internal psychology, their understanding of how to build a house. It really could be anything. And most people specialize in one thing in particular. But the further along you get in this model, the more all the things you know benefit each other. That is the nature of integration. And so we all move through these levels in a path that is completely unique to our own personal experience. This theory is defined as a holarchy, which differs from a hierarchy in that each level transcends and includes the previous level. This does not mean that one level above is better than the level below. It's more like a ladder where each step is required in reaching the next level. Each level is complete in its own, and each successive level is more complete than the previous because they all build off of each other. I'll provide an example from nature. Protons, neutrons, electrons become atoms. Atoms become molecules. Molecules become single-cell organisms, which become multi-cell organisms, which group into flocks or families, which group into villages, which group into cities, and then states, and then countries, and then continents, and then planets, solar systems, and then all the way out to the universe and the edges of the cosmos, if there is such a thing. You can see in this example that it is an inherent structure in nature. You can see in this example that each level is perfect on its own, but each successive level is a more complete representation of the previous. There's nothing wrong with atoms. There's nothing wrong with single-cell organisms. They exist, and they were essential in our reaching our current state. That being said, regressing down the ladder can be harmful. For example, if I wanted to regress back to a single-cell organism, I would have to die to do it. Or at the very least, even if there was some magical spell that could do that, I'd have to give up all of the power and agency that I've gained by evolving into a more complex being. So in that sense, regressing down the developmental ladder is inherently destructive. And progressing up the ladder is inherently creative. Each step up the ladder gives you more insight into the big picture of what we're participating in. Increasing in consciousness, increasing in the scope of awareness, your ability to see things from a broader perspective. And consequently, each step up the ladder gives you more agency in how you interact with the universe. Hopefully that didn't sound like absolute gibberish. I'm really doing my best to explain something that's taken me a long time to understand. It might be helpful at this point to follow along by pulling up an image of the altitudes of development chart. That can be found by typing in altitudes of development on Google search images. One of the difficulties I found when reading Ken Wilber is that over the years he's been studying this and writing about it, he's put out 5 or 6 different versions with slightly different vocabulary for this theory. I'm going to be talking from a version of the altitudes of development chart that is on dailyevolver.com. It's the first image that pops up if you image search for altitudes of development. It might be a good idea to pause this recording and read through that chart before I go through each level. This chart lists each level with a corresponding color on the left. On the right, the word spiral dynamics colors are present. Spiral dynamics is a supporting theory that Ken Wilber used along with other data to create his theory. I haven't read the literature on spiral dynamics, but I would imagine it's quite good. And there's a pretty good chance that it's easier to read than Ken Wilber's work, but I'm still going to explain it from Ken Wilber's perspective because I've connected a lot with his content. On this chart, you will see 9 levels separated into 3 tiers. The levels begin at the bottom and progress to the top. As I mentioned before, each level is fully complete in itself, and each additional level transcends and includes the previous. Just the same way that physical structures of life in the universe progress into larger and larger wholes, so does our psychological perspective of the universe. My initial reaction to seeing this theory and hearing this theory was doubt. I spent a lot of time trying to break this model, looking at it from every angle I could to try to find loopholes and exceptions to the rules, the more that I read Ken Wilber, the more that I realized he's got a really good heuristic here. It's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. But this model does a better job of explaining human nature than anything I've ever found. And as Ken Wilber explains it, these are invisible maps to consciousness. They are helpful in orienting ourselves towards growth. If you're not aware that a map exists, you stay lost a lot longer than you would if you had it. That is why I'm sharing this. Becoming aware of this, internalizing this, trying to break it, will naturally progress you through it. Certain perspectives on life, which I'm about to go through, make it harder than others to accept. For example, the postmodern view makes it very difficult to accept this idea of a holarchy because the postmodern view seems to be inherently oriented against hierarchies of all kinds. This puts me at a major disadvantage because most of the people who are curious about psychedelics and experiment with them fall primarily under the postmodern category. And I'd like to specify that I don't really care for any theory that categorizes people or puts them into boxes. I don't even really like personality tests for that reason. But when I talk about categories and levels in this context, I'm talking about something that is temporary. It is not something that defines you. It is simply a process you are going through. For example, an acorn falls from a tree. It hits the ground. It germinates. It roots. It puts up its leaves. It grows. At each stage, the tree becomes more complete than the previous stage. Here's another example. First, a baby learns to sit up, and then they learn to crawl, and then they learn to stand, and then they learn to walk. None of these activities define the baby, and none of those activities are wrong. Each one is necessary in the progression of learning. In the same way, you could say that walking is a much more complete motion than crawling. And I'll be talking about these levels in a similar sense. I realize that that concept of hierarchy is going to irritate some people, but I hope that you can hold on through this and listen to it, even if you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable. I think it'll be a good payoff in the end if you do. The first tier of this system constitutes the first six levels. In the first tier, each level fights the levels around it. They struggle against each other. They don't understand each other. They don't understand their perspectives. I believe this is the source of much of the societal conflict and misunderstanding that we have. Once you progress into the second tier, into the integral stage, you start to see all these different groups as necessary steps in the mental evolution that we're all participating in. And so it makes it much easier to look at them objectively and empathetically and see their relative correct perspectives. And it can also give you insight into where they might be missing out perspectives from other groups. So I'm going to go through each stage now. I'm going to talk about as much as I can about how they relate to each other, but really, this is something that I am learning every day. So my ability to explain it intellectually is limited. This is the first time maybe you'll be hearing about this. It's going to be a lot to take in. It's going to probably sound pretty weird, me talking about all these levels. But if you start to overlay this theory on society, you can see it everywhere. It's really brilliant. Okay, I think I've drawn enough context to start this. So I'm going to begin with level one. The first level listed is the archaic. This form of consciousness can be seen as a Neanderthal type consciousness. Hunter-gatherers, living on instinct and survival skills, and banding together in small groups for practical survival skills. There's very little consciousness and self-reflection going on in this time. The following level is categorized as tribal, or in some other instances of Ken Wilber's work, he refers to it as the magical stage. This is a stage in which the group begins to see the world as enchanted. They value rituals and deep community. The individual is subordinate to the group. This can be witnessed in indigenous cultures. If you go into places in the world where they haven't interacted with modern humans, they're still very much in this mindset, this magical mindset. At this level, clearly you would still see that survival instinct, banding together with others, all the things I mentioned in the previous level, you will see in use in this level. However, the overarching worldview of these two separate levels would be drastically different from each other. I tend to visualize the transition from archaic to magic as the time when cave paintings were coming about. It was a dawning of a new consciousness. The next level is referred to in this chart as the warrior level. I've also heard it referred to as the mythic level. At the magic level, people are using specific rituals and ceremonies in order to directly influence things that are going on around them. At the mythic level, people are starting to worship a deity which is separate from themselves. They pray to a god which creates changes in their lives. This warrior level on the chart that I'm looking at is described as egocentric, vigilant and aggressive, impulsive and ruthless, courageous, determined, and powerful. The first group that comes to mind when I look at this level is the Roman Empire. I typically imagine this transfer of power as what occurred during the time that the Romans were fighting the Druids. And most instances of genocide, I would say, are examples of times in which people regressed back into that level. The classic phrase which really categorizes this level is the attitude of might makes right, meaning that the most violent person is the one who's in charge. So maybe you can see how human nature devolves back into these earlier levels in times of heightened stress. For example, in prisons, the warrior state seems to be the default. When people are in fight or flight mode, they regress all the way back to the archaic state, at least momentarily. Aspects of the mythic warrior stage include aspects of the tribal and the archaic. If you'd like to learn more about how these levels relate to each other and how they differ from each other, I would probably recommend reading Ken's work directly. From this stage forward, we're going to start getting into the categories which describe perspectives that are very prevalent in today's society. The next level is categorized as traditional, and it's described as ethno or nation-centric, values rules, roles, and discipline, faith in a transcendent god or order, socially conservative. I think just about anybody listening to this can see some of those reflections in society today. I should specify that on this chart, it lists these various online 250,000 years, online 50,000 years, online 15,000 years, etc. What that means is this is the beginning of people waking up to this possibility. The time that it's online is not the same as the time that these attitudes are adopted by the masses. So 5,000 years ago was about the beginning of written history, but that doesn't mean that everybody was writing. There were very few people who were breaking through into this level of consciousness. And there are still people today that are fully in the traditional level of consciousness. I would imagine that the Amish are probably a pretty good example of this. One of the fastest giveaways for me when I'm talking to somebody and I realize that they're in this mindset is when they express to me that their worldview is the only valid worldview, specifically in a religious context. This same attitude often gets held over to the rational, which is coming next, in the form of stark atheism. People at this level might also be rather xenophobic and worried about immigrants. I think it's rather clear you can see this playing out in certain segments of the population in the United States. whether politicians are aware of this theory or not, they are more or less using it, and they tune into that to get votes. So we've still got some of this might makes right attitude in the traditional mindset. It's got a slightly different flavor because their rulers are supposed to be ordained by God. The various monarchies and theocracies throughout history fall into this category. Now, the next level is categorized as modern or rational. This is described as valuing rationality and science, individualism and democracy, capitalism and materialism, risk-taking and self-reliance. When I say materialism, what I mainly refer to is the fact that the rational stage is the entry of atheism. This is not necessarily materialism in the sense of someone wanting to buy more, more, more. This is materialism in the sense that they don't believe in metaphysical concepts. Most people that fall into this category would categorize themselves as atheist or agnostic. It's not uncommon for me to find people who grew up in a religious family and then later on denounced that religion and moved into a more modern, rational mindset. Through the lens of this model, that is not an assessment of the religion as much as it is an assessment of the perspective with which the religion was taught. A more traditional perspective is then rejected by the modern mindset because of the axiomatic nature of faith. It can't be objectively proven for a rational person to understand. It is a step towards growth. It is a step towards creating your own understanding of the universe rather than it being told to you. The primary limitation of the modern mindset and rationality in general is simply the availability of data. When assessing a situation from the perspective of one ego, you really can't have the full picture of what's going on. But I'll get into that a little bit in the next two levels. The purest representation that I've found of this rational mindset is probably Human Action by Ludwig von Mises. That book is starkly rational. There is no consideration for anybody's feelings in there. It is just one continuous string of logic and incentives. I've noticed that most Bitcoiners fall into this category. Not all, but many. There is not a coincidence in this universe. Orange coin, orange level. It's happening. Personally, I believe that Bitcoin enables the planet a chance to elevate itself at least to the modern rational level, and I'm very thankful for that. If I had to make a general assessment, it seems to me that most of the world is somewhere between traditional and rational, modern. There are a growing number of people, mostly in the large cities, that are in the postmodern mindset. And I believe if I could track the postmodern mindset back, it probably really kicked off in the 60s. The postmodern mindset values pluralism and equality. It's relativistic and sensitive and focused on civil rights and environmentalism, world-centric. Ken Wilber refers to this stage as the mean green stage. And I think that if you've ever been in a debate with somebody like this and not been on their level, you'll see exactly why. People in the postmodern mindset are really grappling with rationality and ethics. They're having a really hard time integrating those things together, and it often comes out as a lot of frustration and anger that can be very alienating to people. Cancel culture is based here in the postmodern level. But this is also a level with a resurgence of spirituality. This is a place where people are really grappling with the various perspectives that people have in order to better understand the other side of the argument. It's a reflection of the beginning, the emerging consciousness of someone who is starting to see life through eyes that are not their own, starting to see life from the third person. Starting to see life in a more holistic way that enables them to really center into the oppression that has gone on and is going on in the world. There are valid interests and concerns. However absurd the behavior may appear, there are valid concerns behind a lot of these behaviors. At the same time, though, I've noticed that in the current political circus, these people end up getting weaponized in a way that is not actually beneficial to anyone. And a lot of destructive activity has gone on, a lot of rioting that seems to get justified with this history of oppression that we've experienced on this planet. Many of the narratives that are being pushed seem to be stoking that fire with fuel for political purposes. And that takes away a lot of the legitimacy of the original concern, which is we want to help people and we want to reduce oppression and reduce inequality. People who are viewing life through the postmodern lens often have a really hard time listening to this model and this theory because this theory is laid out as a hierarchy of sorts. It is a holarchy, and there's an important difference, but because it's ranking people, most postmodernists don't like it. Postmodernists are all about egalitarianism. They don't believe in hierarchies. But when you fight holarchies, when you fight rankings of systems within systems, you're fighting against nature itself, because that's the way everything is laid out, as I mentioned earlier, from atoms all the way up to the universal level. We are systems within systems. The other clue to the flaw in this thinking is that any postmodern thinker will tell you that some ideas are more valid than others. For example, democracy is favorable to fascism. Representative government is favorable to a theocracy. These are hierarchies, and these are value assessments that exist on a spectrum. Although the concept of hierarchies is being rejected, their use remains. Postmodernists are often also anti-capitalist. This criticism of capitalism, I believe, comes from the inherent imbalance in power between someone who has capital and someone who does not. The inherent balance of power between an employer and employees. This is a real power dynamic. This is where a lot of postmodernists will start thinking along the lines of Marxism and communism and communist revolution. But ultimately, what it comes down to is using violence to end a power dynamic does not end a power dynamic. It creates a new one. And often these power dynamics get worse and worse each time violence enters the equation. I'm certainly not the first person to point this out, but much of what's going on college campuses right now would fall under the postmodern perspective. And in many ways, it is deeply irrational. This is because these concerns come from a place of emotion, not a place of rationality. And when I say that what they're doing is irrational, I don't say that because I think it doesn't make sense. I say that because much of the behavior I'm witnessing is likely to backfire. However, their grievances against oppression and against discrimination are totally valid. These are things that are really going on. The traditional level often sees these criticisms as a threat to their way of life. The postmodernists would often react to this attitude as a defense of privilege. And the modern level, the rational level, often sees these reactions as being overly emotional and not practical. The postmodern often accuses the modern of being sociopathic or not empathetic enough. A synthesis of these perspectives could be beneficial to everyone, but we won't get there until I reach the integral stage. The postmodernists vigorously attack the modern and their traditional levels. They seem to have some kind of an affinity for the tribal level, and I think that could be a result of all the rejection of the tribal level that happens in the traditional and the modern. They also push back a lot against the integral level, so the postmodern level ultimately becomes the most alienating level, which is ironic because it is the exact opposite of their intent. Their intent is to create more equality and sensitivity in the world. However, the way that they go about it often has the opposite effect. There's a certain flavor of shame and guilt that comes along with the postmodern aspect. And shame and guilt exist at all the different levels. But in the postmodern view, it often manifests as this sort of self-destructive opting out of self-interest. Self-interest is very prevalent in the other levels and is nearly completely absent in the postmodern level as a reaction to the previous. People viewing their life through this lens will often take actions that are not good for them personally because they have hopes to benefit others. What I'd like to offer as a potential counter to this view is that nowhere in nature is there a living organism that forgoes its own self-interest to benefit others that are not in its family. For example, you're never going to find a tree that doesn't grow tall enough to get to the sunlight because it wants to allow the other trees around it to grow. You're not going to find an animal that won't drink water because they're concerned that somebody else might not get any. Some might argue that our advanced consciousness as humans enables us to be altruistic and to give with no expectation of receiving. That is absolutely true. But what really helped me in navigating the postmodern mindset was finding a balance between self-interest and the interest of others. This balancing, in my perspective, is only found in a spiritual mindset. The spiritual mindset I'm referring to is simply understanding the self. What is the self? When you hurt yourself or you hurt someone else, there's no difference. We are all individual aspects of the same energy field. And so that's where the balance comes in my opinion. I'm still struggling with the postmodern somewhat because I made my way out of it maybe a year ago. Each time you progress through a level, you often reject the level below and the level above. And this doesn't happen all at once, but there is a general trend which can be observed. Ken Wilber talks about allergies and addictions which occur at each level. An allergy would be defined as something that you are opposed to inherently. As soon as you hear it, you're triggered. It's very similar to the concept of shadow. An addiction is a particular part of a worldview that you cannot let go, that you're so attached to it that you can't see that similar aspect from other perspectives. You can get hung up in some part of your viewpoint on life at various levels. For example, you could have a postmodern view on just about everything, but when it comes to sex, you could have a traditional view. Or you could have a rational view in just about every aspect of your life, except when it comes to capital punishment, you have more of a warrior mythic view. That would generally manifest itself as the death penalty. I know I have some allergies in the postmodern area. Sometimes when I hear people say certain things, for example, about taking away rights from someone because they want to right some wrong from history, or especially when somebody says something about wanting to intentionally reduce the population of the planet, I get triggered by that. I don't like the idea of trying to enforce physical will upon somebody in the present to sort something out that happened from the past. Ultimately, my number one rule, which progresses in my view all the way down to the bottom of the ladder, is I will not condone violence for the use of punishment in any situation. The episode on nonviolent communication will provide some greater clarity around that. But this integration process is continuous work, and honestly, I'm happy to participate in it. I find new ways to empathize with individuals from each of these perspectives every day. Which leads me to the integral stage, which is the last one I'm going to cover because I don't feel qualified to talk about anything above that. The reason that the integral stage appears in a different tier than the other stages is because this is the first stage in which you realize you're on a ladder and you look down the ladder and you see each step was necessary for you to get to where you are. And if you cut one of them out, the ladder falls over. So you realize right there that there is no view which is wrong. There are only views that are more complete. From this place, it makes it easier to talk to individuals at each level on their level. It makes it easier to negotiate peace between the levels. It makes it easier to understand the perspectives of these individuals and also to see where they're hung up in different aspects. At least if you know about this model, it can be really helpful to do that. When I watch what's going on in online arguments, mostly what I see is arguments between traditional, modern, and postmodern. Almost everything going on in the United States right now is about that. You have different political interests utilizing these perspectives to stir up conflict between individuals. The integral stage doesn't fight with the stages below, but each of the stages in the first tier all fight with each other. They will constantly be in conflict until they realize the necessity of their existence, each one and each other, to understand that they're all part of the evolving consciousness. The integral stage is a place of reflection, looking back down the ladder, seeing where am I caught up? What am I avoiding? Where is my shadow hiding on this ladder? There must be areas where I'm not fully free to ascend. If I'm going to use the ladder analogy, what I like to imagine is that my shoelace is like tied to one of the ladder rungs below, and that's what's stopping me from progressing further. So I'm looking for all the little knots and hang-ups and allergies and addictions that I have. One of the greatest benefits of the integral perspective is that there's no demonizing anybody. There's no hate. There's no disappointment or disgust. When you hear a perspective which is radically different from your own, you can kind of see where the person is at. When you meet a five-year-old that doesn't know math, do you get upset at them? No, of course not. They haven't learned it yet. Of course, there's a motivation to encourage them to learn math because it's helpful, it's useful, and they may benefit from it, but there's no need to be upset or to be disappointed. And that's why I think it's so beneficial to be aware of this model. It can really bring a lot of peace and reconciliation between people. However you may feel about it at this point, I assure you that if you really dive deep into this topic and read and read and read and try to assess and read about history and understand all the different levels, you will see this model reflecting itself everywhere. And while there may be some minor hiccups here and there, the general framework in place here is correct in my view. I haven't found anything that's able to break it yet. I'd like to see more discussion and debate around this model. I'd like to see people trying to break it because it's built for that purpose. It is built as an integrative system that is supposed to encompass all of life. That's quite an intellectually tall order, but I think that Ken Wilber hasn't really gotten the attention that he deserves, partially because his writing is so difficult to understand. He uses a lot of words that other people don't use because he's very, very specific about the terminology that he likes to use. That's why I'm trying to summarize this in a way that is a little bit more user-friendly. As he's often mentioned in his books as well, when you try to integrate all these tier one perspectives, all of them hate you for it. They all push back. They all get defensive because they don't like each other. And they don't want to be categorized into a single whole. But the truth is, the spiritual truth, all the way up at the top, it is all one thing. It is all one whole. So he's right, at least from the top down. Now, trying to build that back from the bottom up is complicated. But personally, I think he's done an incredible job. So I hope to see more and more recognition for him in the future. The truth is, if I hadn't come across Ken Wilber when I did, I would not have ever gone down the path that I have. So I have a lot to thank Ken for. I appreciate all the hard work that he's put in. The segment I just finished was the growing up segment. The episode on shadow is the cleaning up segment. I'm going to briefly talk about the waking up segment, but ultimately that's what this whole podcast is about. That's what the first episode is about, and that's what the witness episode is about. Everyone has the capacity to have a direct mystical spiritual experience. Those who have had them often don't realize exactly what has occurred. Some do, and some realize what occurred and then later convince themselves that it didn't because of their worldview. And I suppose that's my point. Depending on the developmental level that you're existing at, you will interpret your psychedelic trip differently. You will interpret your mystical and spiritual event differently based on your worldview. That is how you have situations of deeply spiritual people saying things that are absolutely absurd and bigoted, or you have people who are following a spiritual path which results in blowing themselves up in a crowded marketplace. These things occur not because individuals are evil, but because they don't have the whole perspective necessary to avoid these pitfalls. Deep spiritual truth has the potential to occur for everyone. However, the way that those individuals interpret that truth is completely determined by the perspective that they hold. One of the aspects of waking up that I really enjoy is that when you start to find some wiggle room between the witness and the ego, you will be able to take an objective look at your opinions and the attitudes you're attached to, the various hang-ups that you might have and aspects of life. And this can give you a lot of freedom to kind of move up and down the ladder and look at things without feeling necessarily attacked or as though you're in danger. If you get a feeling that you're being attacked or that you're in danger just because of something somebody said, that is a perfect indicator of a place where you're hung up, a place where you might have some piece of your identity attached to a concept. In the Buddhist tradition, the source of suffering is attachment. Not just attachment to physical possessions and relationships, but also to concepts that you identify with. That being said, I'd like to clarify something very important that helped me during integration. The ego is not an enemy. It's not something to be destroyed. It's something to be observed. It is a tool. It's a tool that can be used just for what it's for, to let you know that you are physically existing separately from other people for the time being. I've heard lots of New Age discussions about how to get rid of the ego and how to destroy the ego. I think that can be really confusing and kind of harmful to people that are struggling with that balance between ego and unity consciousness. To me, the fun part is to realize you have an ego and that that's part of your experience here in this physical world, but not to get too hung up on it. Any of the psychedelics I've talked about up to this point, and even certain meditation techniques, can be used to separate yourself from the ego temporarily. And that can be a truly blissful experience if you're ready for it. But that ecstatic experience of unity doesn't necessarily lend itself that well to completing practical tasks in your daily life, or having relationships with people, or handling family dynamics, for example. So, as with all things, there's a balance to be found. And I hope that all of this intellectual rambling was relevant to you in some way. But if not, that's absolutely fine. I gave it my best shot to explain these concepts as I understand them, but this is something I've been researching for years, and I know it might not connect with everybody, so that's absolutely fine. There are many other means of integration, and many of them are much more heartfelt and less brainy than this one. So don't let this spoil your idea of integration. In the end, there's really no replacement for an integration circle with close friends who communicate in an empathetic way with each other. I've been very fortunate to have sat in many beautiful integration circles, and I've seen some real healing take place. Healing that takes place after the medicine wears off. And that's really integration, in my opinion. All this stuff I talked about is an absolute rabbit hole, but it's not necessary for integration work. If you want to keep it simple, go back and listen to the episode on shadow. That's probably my favorite one, and I think it's the most important. As I mentioned earlier, if you follow the shadow work process and you do it consistently, you won't even have to think about the rest of this stuff. It will take care of itself naturally. But the last recommendation I have is one of the first recommendations I had. The Presence Process by Michael Brown is a wonderful integration process that can be used with or without psychedelics. And my favorite phrase from Ken Wilber that comes back to me all the time is only this: transcend and include.